Osborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company, you heard it. Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Alex White is here. Alexandra. Cofield, Steve Cofield. Griffin is back at the Finley Toyota Studios. 3 hours on the way. Lots of NFL picks. Even more college football picks. Plenty of Raiders breakdown. We're a couple of days removed from the Raiders' loss against the Chargers. And there's a lot of things in the game that were pretty disturbing. So we'll hit on those inside of 5 minutes. But first of all, Griffin back in the studio. How are you? How do we sound? Are we all good?
We are all good to go. Let's get another episode of Cofield and Company going, yeah?
All right, let's do it. Alex, what's going on?
Not much. Just trying to keep up here. You know, it's a crazy time of the year. A lot of work to be done with college football and NFL. And Aviators are back in town. Excited about that. We got playoffs too. So a couple busy weeks in a row, but I love it.
I don't want to bring it up. I usually don't bring it up to the middle of the show where you're respectable in the Circuit Invitational. I was tracking you. You had a couple of tough losses. Were you 4-3 this week?
Oh, my gosh. A couple tough losses. You could say my square picks. I went 4-0 with the dogs.
Picks.
No, I had two overs that weren't close. Well, actually, one of them, first half, was flying over. And then I had a favorite, Clemson, that lost as well. So 4-3, and my best bet did not hit. 7 points right now. I think tied right there in the 7-10 mark.
I saw week one someone got out to a 5-2 start. Did anyone kill it this week? Anyone go 7-0, 6-1? We can look it up.
Yeah.
I'll look it up. But yeah, Alex is in the Circa Invitational, 7 picks every week, college football and the NFL. So last year she finished second place. Pressure.
This is a good spot though, you know? I don't want to come out too strong. Just right here.
Well, I think you said it before. When you're in contests like this, you got to avoid the disaster weeks. So the 0-7, the 1-6 kill you. If you can have lots of 4-3 weeks and then fire out with some big weeks, then you're good. But you just can't have the bombs.
Yeah, I think that sums it up perfectly.
Speaking of bombs, Shohei Ohtani last night hits his 50th. First player with a new team since A-Rod to hit 50 in back-to-back seasons. Only other guy to do that. Think about it. New team, 50 homers, back-to-back seasons with a new team. Any clue?
Well, I saw that written down, so I might have cheated.
Did I have it on there? There it is, yeah. Babe Ruth. So it hasn't happened since 1920-21, which if there was social media back then everyone with the Red Sox would have been fired. But good for them. They didn't care about winning back then. So they were able to fund their musical, and Babe Ruth went on to win lots of World Series and hit over 700 home runs. But, yeah, that was the last guy to do it before A-Rod. So what Ohtani's doing is, again, historical this year. I mean, down here, 50 homers and 19 steals instead of 50-50 like he did a year ago. But he's also pitching this
That's
year.
Right.
And then last night, he went out and he threw 5 no-hit innings. And they took him out. You know, he's on a pitch count. You don't want to annihilate the guy as he's trying to rehab from TJ. But that's pretty incredible. That's another one of those moments where you're like, my God, this guy is one of the best ever, and he's certainly unique in this era.
It really is incredible. And there's been plenty of starts for him where he's gotten no run support from the rest of his team and had a leadoff home run. So definitely need more from the guys behind him. But what he's doing, yeah, it's pretty amazing to watch.
So he's got to think about the playoffs and so do the Dodgers. Because if he's going to play DH, then it kind of limits his ability to be a flex pitcher, which by that I mean, should he start in the playoffs? Let's address that first of all. Should he get starts?
Yes, I think so. Especially with the current form that he is in. I think they played it perfectly, kind of stretching him out as the season has gone. But you saw it last night, right? Now is the perfect time for him to start. I wouldn't go more than 5 innings, though, really. I mean, I think that would probably be the cap. But the Dodgers are going to have a lot of guys that have started throughout the year that are coming in relief in the playoffs.
The problem is their bullpen is not good. And it doesn't seem to be getting better. Blake Treinen got destroyed last night, winds up losing the game. Tanner Scott came back. He hasn't been good. Kopech's like 3 games in to being back. So that's kind of nerve-wracking. I said from the beginning of the season, and I actually said it last year, I love giving my, I'm the only one, that if Shohei could pitch 2 out of 3 days with a separation in between, if he could throw an inning or two in relief, I think he'd actually have more value to a team that, not that their starters are great, because like Emmett Sheen is not going to go more than 5 or 6 innings. We know Kershaw is limited to 5, but they have enough starting pitching, fingers crossed, if guys like Snell and Glasnow can make it through the end of the season, that they really need some bullpen help. But at DH, he wouldn't be able to do that. He'll have to play the field to make sure that he can relief pitch and still stay in the game. So he'd have to actually start at outfield. And he said he's thinking about it. This one's interesting to me because he said, this is Ohtani. He said, I've been having various conversations with different people and pitching and relief has come up as well. That applies to the mound and possibly even the outfield. He said, I want to make sure I'm prepared to handle it. What do you think he means by handle it? The outfield or the quick bounce back of relief, maybe pitching 2 out of 3 days?
Ooh. Probably a combination, right? I mean, when you are just playing DH and not playing half of the game, it's a lot different. And then, yeah, the bounce back between days off for pitching. So it'll be interesting to see what they do decide to do. But I'm happy you brought up Emmett Sheehan because he has been really good.
Been really good. He saved him.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I mean, they're starting pitching. They've never really gotten healthy with a 5-man rotation, and guys they've plugged in just haven't been good.
I mean, they need Yamamoto to have his best stuff too, definitely.
I mean, good 5-man rotation. I don't know that they're going to use all 5, but if you had Yamamoto, Sheehan, Glasnow.
What do you do with Kershaw after having a great regular season at this age?
What would you do? Who would you start? I mean, it's Sheehan or Kershaw.
Ooh.
Probably Kershaw now.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to take him out of his normal mode, and I don't know that he wants to be getting up and down, warming up a bunch of times. So, right. You know, he starts, and Sheehan basically is the trailer for anyone who has a bad start.
Yeah.
And we know that Roberts plays it by the book, the new book, right? If someone is struggling, they don't get a whole lot of time to work it out. Like, there ain't going to be a guy who goes, you know, giving up 6 runs in the first or second inning. They're going to pull him, and he may use the guy, you know, earlier, later in the series. So I would say, yeah, Kershaw would be the guy who's fourth if Yamamoto is all ready to go and has his good stuff. But then there's the outfield part of it. And Griffin, I know you – well, I'll get to you in a couple minutes, Griffin. I want to ask you about this. But in your case, did you play softball?
Okay. Not competitively, no.
So what do you think of a baseball player saying that he'd have to make sure that he's prepared to handle playing the outfield? And roughly that would be in less than 2 weeks. Does that seem like a Herculean task for Ohtani to have to play outfield?
No.
I mean, I understand what he's saying. And maybe stretch his legs out a little bit. I don't mean like one day stretch before the field, but like do some running, obviously, you know, practice right. Some fly balls, shag some fly balls.
Right.
Like, I think he can handle it. I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope that's not a detriment here. I mean, I love the guy and he is worth whatever he's making every year. But come on. I hope he can play the outfield if he needs to.
I think it might be more mentally preparing for anything that is asked of him.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the Raiders here. And each day we've broken down. It's been, you know, a day plus now, day and a half, day and three quarters, since Monday Night Football. And I want to get your view, the pro, the handicapper, Alex White, your view on just the Raiders in general now in terms of a power rating, a handicap view on the team. I think the offense will be okay. I do have some important questions, though. I think the defense can actually be above average. So what are you thinking of the Raiders right now in terms of, are they a top 24 team? Can they be a top 16 team? Are they a bottom 8 team?
I'm going to pull up my numbers from this week just to make sure I have the exact number. But I think you nailed it perfectly. Didn't the Chargers have just 3 points in the second half? I mean, they definitely helped with that and had some costly turnovers kind of begging the Raiders to cover their back door at the end there. But defensively, better than expected. And then offensively, I think just taking a little time to really gel and figure out what works. I also think that the Chargers defense is really good. I mean, it reminded me of Minnesota Vikings defense last year or what we're seeing from the Packers this year. Geno Smith really didn't have a lot of answers, that the wide receivers could not get any separation, or so I think that has a lot to do with the offense this time around, but it'll be yet to see. I think they're right there in the middle of the pack. So you said 24th. Okay, I've got them 19th.
Okay. Right. All right. So not upper half of the league right now, not the way the offense is playing. If the offense can kick it into gear and at least be representative and look closer to what it looked like, at least passing-wise, in the Patriot game, then they could be fine. I like what Max Crosby said afterwards in his podcast. He said, we didn't stop playing hard until they were taking a knee. We had some unfortunate field positions. He's right. That's not a shot at the offense. That's facts. He said the New England game, we gave up 3 points second half, same with the Chargers game. So that's adjustments by Pat Graham and the defense, and they played good second halves. And believe me, they were put in terrible positions repeatedly against L.A. So I want to build on the defense and then get to what the offense is with the Raiders, as the number is sitting at 3.5 for the next game against the Commanders. The win total has also been adjusted, so we'll talk about that as well. Make sure you sign up for a new account at Boomer Sportsbook. That's the new sportsbook in Ellis Island, and at Casino Valley Verde. It's Nevada's only independent sportsbook, built by locals, driven by that independence, powered by a player-first mindset. They've got a first deposit match right now up to $250. I signed up on Saturday. I mean, it took less than 7 minutes to sign up. There's no paperwork anymore. You just do it on the phone. You scan your ID. You're all good to go, and it's pretty quick. And then I funded my account, and then the extra $250, because I put in like $300, the extra $250 was put in. And I'm good to go. I am betting. Am I winning? You know what? When I mention Boomers later in the show, maybe we'll update my story on the winning. It's not Alex wins a lot more than I do. On the way back, again, make sure you get into Boomer Sportsbook. Sign up for a new account. It's a great, great sportsbook locally here at Casino Valle Verde and Ellis Island. On the way back, let's get the update on Jaden Daniels and also some of the numbers on the Raiders and the offense right now. There is a unit on the offense. Man, they got to kick it into gear or this is going to be a long season.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
For you, Alex, does the Raiders game against the Commanders have a completely different feel if it's Jaden Daniels down to Marcus Mariota? And before you even get the answer, I'm going to say this. As a comparison, the Jets will probably be without, I don't know if he was officially ruled out, but will be without Justin Fields. They will play Tyrod Taylor. I don't see much of a difference aside from Taylor's an upgrade throwing the ball, slight. Can't run like Fields, but I don't think the Jets fall way down. Mariota's very experienced, has been a starter, was a number one. Jaden Daniels to Mariota.
I'd say the market was pretty correct there, 2.5 to 3 points for the drop off, but I really don't get the feeling that it's all that different from where Jaden Daniels is right now. He's definitely not mid-season form. Kind of saw this last year, and it didn't take long. I think it was week 3 or 4 where the Commanders finally really got it together. But I wasn't too concerned with them just after those first two games. Now this is a little concerning if he does have to miss some time. But to your point, the bettors actually took the 7 once it was announced that Justin Fields was not playing, and now it's down to 6.5. So that is pretty funny. It actually went the opposite way of where it normally would with a quarterback being announced out.
So we have a middle chance here. Am I reading this right? Right? If I bet the Commies, well, if I got them at it was 3, right? To open, I think. I thought I saw some 3s. So let's just say 3.5 was the best number you could get. So if I laid it with the Commies, I could come back. You think this will go where if Jaden Daniels, it's announced that he's going to be back. Where does it go? 6.5, 7?
I think it was a 6.5.
Did you already bet it?
I didn't bet this game, no.
Do you wish you bet it? Do you have confidence that Jaden Daniels, I mean, he didn't practice today. Today's Wednesday. Friday, they said he's going to give it a go. It's a knee.
Yeah.
I feel like he's going to play.
I do, too.
Although there are other people who are like, oh, it's just the Raiders, so you got important games coming up. Like, okay, the Raiders aren't that bad. I feel like it's different with Mariota, and what I mean by that is I do believe there is a rally behind the backup quarterback, but I feel like it has to be someone who maybe no one believes in, and then everyone's getting amped up. Like, Mariota's been around long enough, and he's played. I don't know if they get this, like, extra boost mentally. I know I'm probably diving too deep on this one, trying to mentally analyze it, and maybe it's simpler than that.
No, help me, because I checked out. I started watching that quarterback show, and it was Kirk Cousins, Patrick Mahomes, and Marcus Mariota. And that is when he was the starter, right? He kind of, like, tapped out, right? Like, almost lost his love for the game and, like, didn't even really want to be a starter anymore. And I don't know. It seemed like he mentally, it was a lot for him. So, with that being said, and what you're saying, I think they could rally behind him. I think he's got the talent. I think he could help him win a game or two.
All right. So, right now, William Hill has this one at Raiders plus 3.5, minus 120. The even bet is on the side of the Commies, minus 3.5 with Washington. It's 190. Total is 44. What do you think of the total? Because the Raiders defense is playing pretty decently. I mean, they gave up. Listen, Drake May and Herbert were able to throw. Herbert was kind of, a lot of it was dink and dunk. Yeah. They got the 60-yarder Quentin Johnston. So that kind of sucked. That pushed the numbers up. Like, I don't feel like the Commanders' run game is going to crush the Raiders. I mean, I think I would lean under on this one.
Yeah. No, I would too. Especially, I mean, I really like what we've seen from Debo over there. But you can tell that Terry McLaurin sat out for a while, right? He is definitely not in midseason form. So I would definitely lean to the under here.
And here's the other problem. Are the Raiders a one-dimensional offense? Can they only throw? Because the run game to this point, however you want to explain it away. Week one was kind of like equal blame. Hey, Genty, not patient enough. Young guy. Got to make sure the line's all set up. You know, let the blocking get complete. But also the line was blamed. This game, I think Genty gets a little softer touch in terms of criticism because he had, 11 carries for 43 yards. The number that's out that I think is pretty shocking, and yet if you follow the Raiders, it's not. But Ashton Genty, a top 10 pick, is only averaging 2.7 yards a carry. That's terrible.
Yes.
Ashton Genty is averaging 2.7 yards a run. Ashton Genty, after contact, is averaging 2.8.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's like, and why is that number? Like, I know, I see a bunch of Boise State donks who are like, oh, my God, the Raiders aren't really a good running team. Okay, well, this has been the case for years. Josh Jacobs had similar numbers. You would see Josh Jacobs with this very pedestrian yards per carry, and then you're like, wait, yards after contact, he's the top three guy in the league. Contact behind the line with Josh Jacobs was like mind-blowing. How many times he's starting to run and boom, right out of it. He's not even past the line of scrimmage. And the same thing is happening to Genty.
So does that all fall on the offensive line? And
yes, it does.
Interior offensive line?
No, it's the O-line's coach. It's his fault. Now, here's the thing. How many different O-line coaches have they had? Because this has been regime to regime to regime. It's right now, it appears to be personnel. And right now, Alex, and I'll let you in on this. I don't mean like I'm giving you permission, Griffin, but I definitely want to hear from you as a former defensive player in college. Right now, I think it is offensive line approach. I don't mean blocking schemes. I mean monies dedicated to the offensive line. They have been trying over and over and over again to mine something from diamonds in the rough. And they actually, you know what? They did it with Jermaine Illuminor. And then he got stolen. And they had Johnny Simpson, and it didn't work out here, and then he's been productive elsewhere. When you watch the offensive line, Griffin, from year to year to year, what is the issue?
I think the issue is just there's not, like you said, there's not enough investment on that side of the O-line. I mean, you look right now, JBJ is out with injury. He's dealing with some injury bugs this season. And the rest of the squad, more or less the same. It just seems like it kind of like with the Chicago Bears rolling out an offensive line before all the offseason moves this season. talk about 2024, rolling out the same offensive line and expecting different results isn't really going to do much for you. You need to get guys in there and get personnel in there line that can make a difference, especially for a young rookie running back in Ashton Jeanty, who's still getting used to the speed of the game, who is trying to figure out his way and get his footing. So I think when it comes to the run game, everyone wants to directly look at the running back. Ashton Jeanty even came out and said, you know, I want to take all the you know, it's my, I want it all put on me for our struggles in the first 2 weeks. But in reality, if your O-line can't be physical, if your O-line can't step up and work together as a unit and move the, you know, move the defense, you're just not going to have any success. It's a boat without a rudder.
I like to lean on PFF because I'm not sitting there ISOing on the offensive lineman. I think that's what it's especially good for, the offensive line, the defensive line, defense in general. Pro Football Focused. Focus. Offensive line for the Raiders through the first two games. Now, keep in mind, if you have a game where you're like graded out of 90, I mean, that's, you're freaking, you balled out. That's a great game. That's Max Crosby territory every once in a while. Max usually resides in the 80s. So if you're in the 80s, you had a good game. You're above average. 70s, kind of average. Into the 60s, average, kind of below average. In the 50s, it's starting to really be below average. In the 40s, you had a bad game. You're having a tough time. 30s and 20s, forget about it. I mean, it's tough to justify playing you. Here's the PFF season grades for the Raiders. JPJ, one game, he's at a 44-1. Dylan Parham, one of the guards, two games, he's got a 48 rating. Al Kappa, Alex Kappa, he's got the one game in for JPJ, 56-2. DJ Glaze at right tackle, 60.4. That's that group right there. Not good. And then Colt Miller, he's playing well. So you got your left tackle playing well, and the other guys, I know they're looking for rhythm, chemistry, cohesion, but those are individual grades. And while Miller is shining and he makes the big money, the other guys are not. And listen, it's a long season, but I feel like we've seen this pattern repeated over and over and over again with the Raiders. And if the offensive line doesn't get better, I don't want to blame all the struggles on Geno Smith in the pass game. He wasn't very accurate. But, you know, the pass blocking, okay, better than the run blocking, but look at the bar. The pass blocking has to freaking cross. So they got to get better. This is what they trusted in. They were going to piece it together. Going to go with young guys and DJ Glaze and Parham and, you know, JPJ, recent draft picks. They drafted a couple linemen. They're not ready to go yet. Kappa had a down year a year ago. He's been beat up. They brought him in. You know, hey, bounce back. Better than average offensive guard. But I like, well, I crushed Jeanty. He shouldn't get crushed.
No. I mean, through two games, it kind of shows you that too, right? I mean, the Chargers were a playoff team last year, and while people thought they would be down losing their left guard with Salter, they just moved guys around and got even better this year. You can tell it's their second year with Harbaugh. And then the first game against the Patriots, a bottom half team, right? And they can hide those, I don't know, problems with the offensive line, and the left tackle's doing well, and Geno Smith is throwing and having a great second half there. So kind of just shows you hopefully they can improve throughout the season and challenge some of these upper tier teams. But my thought when I was watching the game on Monday was, man, it'd be really nice to have a 1-2 punch, to have a thunder for Ashton Jeanty, right? Like thinking of Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery, where I feel like the next running backs in the room are very similar to Ashton Jeanty, right? So it doesn't really change.
I mean, I can't even get a read, Alex, on Zamir White. I don't know what he is because he's had a run behind this line. I don't know.
True.
I mean, the first thing is your main running back who you picked in the top 10, you've got to feel comfortable enough to get him 16 to 20 carries a game. But you've also got to have success when you run. The other thing is you can't give up on it because it was really weird. They had a near 12-minute drive in the second half from the third into the fourth quarter with 19 plays. Jeanty started out the drive with a 13-yard run. He never got another carry. It's very weird. Again, it's not hit the panic button. It's just, I'm sure the coaches are saying this, like, we have got to get better in terms of run blocking, and Ashton Jeanty's got to pick it up because his run game has to be somewhat representative, or the Raiders, I don't think, can win as a one-dimensional team. We're about 15 minutes away from breaking things down for the UNLV game on the road against Miami of Ohio. We'll bring in their color analyst. But up next, maybe wedding bells? Maybe? Well, at least they're going to have a kid. Celebrity couple that involves a NFL player with big news.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
You know, we all exchange stories for prep before we come in to do Cofield and Company. And Griffin has just gone back to the well day after day here. He's very, very interested. I'll say smitten. He's very smitten with the relationship of Stefon Diggs and Cardi B. I am a Cardi B fan. I'm not so much a Diggs fan. Griffin, why are you so infatuated with what's going on with this celebrity couple?
Oh, I'm just a sucker for love. I love it. Cardi B, let me start off with yesterday's topic. Yesterday's topic starts off with Cardi B going on the Today with Jenna and Friends show, and she goes on there and basically says, I am open to getting remarried. She is well-known, you know, she had a relationship with rapper Offset. They had three kids together, and then they filed for divorce twice. She's divorced, but now dating Stefon Diggs. So she was hyping up that relationship and basically saying, I'm open to get remarried. You know, I'm not closing the book. Then today we get news with Cardi B promoting her new album. She also let it slip that she and Stefon Diggs are expecting their first child together. This is going to be, I believe, Stefon Diggs' second child. And then Cardi B, this is going to be, I believe, her fourth child, yes, with three of them being with rapper Offset.
Okay. She's 32. She's going to be 33 in October. This is nothing against her because, like I said, I like her. I thought she was older. Her song suggests a lot of experience, if you know what I mean. So I thought she was a little bit older. Experience. Griffin, I'll ask you. Why are we all in a rush to have kids?
I don't know what this "we" is. I don't got no little Griffins running around here. I'm being, you know, keeping it tight to the vest. You have kids, you gotta be in a certain level of lifestyle, like you know, playing wide receiver for the Patriots or being a world famous rapper to be able to just have, you know, kids whenever feel like it.
I always look at these situations from the money standpoint. What do you think Cardi B's net worth is? And I wonder what Steph Diggs is at, Stefon Diggs. I think they might be kind of even.
I was thinking that.
But they're both wealthy. I don't know. Is this accurate? I'm going to use this source. The Hindu Stan Times. Does that sound like a reliable source? That was the first thing that came up. Yeah, I'm going to say Google on the searches a lot of times. I feel like you got to go a little bit deeper than the first thing that comes up. But that was 9 hours ago. They're all over it. Times of India, very interested in this story as well. But she's worth $80 million. I'm guessing he's got to be worth, I don't know, somewhere north of 50, 60, 70. He made some pretty good money in Buffalo for at least a year.
I mean, this line right here from Pro Football Network, because other people are just as interested as you, who is richer.
Well, by the way, I didn't say I was interested. I did. Griffin brought it up. This is a celebrity couple that was doing a lot of PDA at the Knicks playoffs games. They're relatively new. I don't know that they're going to get married, but they're already having a kid. That intrigues me. I don't have kids.
Just to make sure, she was there on the boat when he got...
Yeah, she was, actually, I think.
That video.
Yeah.
That is
correct. When he was holding up the baggie full of pink stuff.
Okay.
I think those were her friends, but she might have been... She was hanging out somewhere else.
Okay.
I don't think there was an issue with that. I think the issue was, like, okay, what's in the bag?
Right, of course.
Right.
She also...
But, yeah, so this says she's beating out her boyfriend by $20
million. Oh, wow, they're talking her finances publicly. Okay. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. If those are the real numbers. Now I see another story. She says she's got $101 million net worth. So whatever. Combined, they're worth like $140-160 million. That's not bad. I don't know what their agreement will be if they split up. Although technically, right now they're not married. So I don't know when, you know, when you have a kid, what happens at that point. So
well, I mean,
Griffin, do you know?
I don't know, but I will say I want to highlight one thing. You got to give it to Cardi B. And even if they were to split up, I got no doubt that Homegirl's going to take every penny because she also just recently got done with in court. She just got done in court. No, I'm saying it because I'm watching the film, Steve. She's in court.
Did she beat up Offset?
No. She went to a doctor's appointment, and one of the nurses at the hospitals, was suing her, trying to claim that she assaulted her, a bunch of crazy stuff. But you watch the clips from the court case. Man, she's stone cold. She doesn't blink. She acts goofy up on the stand, but in reality, I see that as her just not flinching. She's not scared. She's not afraid to be herself up there. Even though there's, you know, millions of dollars on the line, she's just stone cold. I love it.
You're really falling in love with Cardi B as well. That was Tasha K, right?
Believe so. I need to go back and look.
You have no idea. While you were talking, we were both searching, so I figured I'd get you with some weird Cardi B knowledge. So there you go. Stephon Diggs with the Patriots. I'm sure this is all pleasing that Diggs is still in the spotlight from a celebrity standpoint. Now it's time to produce for Drake May and the rest of the Patriots, but they're not getting married, but they are expecting. So congrats to the celebrity couple. On the way back, we'll go out to Oxford, Ohio, Hamilton, Ohio. We're going to do some fact-finding. We're going to find out about the Red Hawks as UNLV goes on the road and is a very small favorite. Should they be favored?
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Alexander White, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. Let's go out to Ohio, get a preview of the Miami, Ohio Red Hawks as UNLV is heading out to Ohio in about a day and a half to play a road game on Saturday. Terry Bridge is up with us. Terry, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm real good. I know you guys are good. You're in Las Vegas.
Yeah, everything's good here pretty much year-round. This is our nicest time of year, too. It's like a 93 degrees with very low humidity. It's beautiful right now, not to rub it in. Actually, I think it's going to be pretty warm there on Saturday, but we can get to the game day forecast a little later on. Okay, let's talk about Red Hawk football and what's happened so far this year. It's a winless start, but you got to consider the competition, right?
Well, when you go to Wisconsin and you open up in front of 60-plus thousand and you go to Rutgers and, you know, that game was delayed, but it, you know, it doesn't matter at that point. It's two Big Ten teams. Those are Big Ten players, and, you know, we walked in there to Wisconsin with a very young football team, and we walked into Rutgers with four quarters under their belt. But, you know, it's going to take a minute, and patience is the key word, I think, at Miami right now, is to get through the preseason before we head into the Mid-American Conference play.
Tell me about the environment around Miami, Ohio, because winning is expected. Is there patience? Because it doesn't seem like in college football right now, Terry, patience is really given anywhere.
You're right, especially, you know, you look at coaches that get fired early, and, you know, it's crazy what's going on with college sports, but... Yeah, I think that there is some patience there. Chuck Martin's done a heck of a job over the years. You know, at one time, he had won four games, I think, and lost 25, but he's been the winningest coach now for in the Mid-American Conference over the last eight seasons, and they've turned it around. There's a certain culture there, and everybody likes to use that, but Miami's going to be okay this year. It's going to take a little time, and I do believe that people are going to allow that, because if you look at our offense, we had no one coming back, not one starter, and we lost some very good players on defense, Matt Salopek, Ty Wise, Corey Suttle, Brian Ugu, and the list goes on defensively for a team that finishes, you know, had been finishing the top 10, top 15 in the country in total defense. So I think there's a lot of leeway there, but nobody's going to work harder at getting this team better each day, each practice, each game, the Chuck Martin and his staff.
Terry Bridge, color analyst for Miami of Ohio football on radio, is with Cofield and Company here on ESPN Las Vegas. All right, well, tell us about the offense, the new players on offense. How transfer heavy is it? I know Finn was in the MAC, then he went to Baylor, then he came back. How has the offense looked going from game one to game two, now heading into game three?
Well, game two was a lot better, obviously, than game one, we couldn't convert on third down against Wisconsin. We were 0-for-9. Didn't get much better against Rutgers on third down. Daquan Finn made a play, got a touchdown. He showed what he could do with his legs. Kenny Tracy really hasn't carried the ball that much through the first two games, only 12 times, and he was a returning running back. And that's my lab. He is barking, if you hear that.
He's fired up.
Yeah, he gets fired up. But, you know, Cam Perry is a deep threat for us. He did play last year, not a lot, but did play. Cole Weaver, a wide receiver, you know, he caught maybe 5 passes a season ago. Keith Reynolds, he caught 7 passes against Rutgers, and he's a transfer out of Washington. We have about 20 that came out of the portal over time over the last couple of years. I think UNLV's just about every roster you look at pretty much in college football has gone to the portal. But our transfers had to help us, you know, and if not, we'd be in deep trouble, that's for sure.
So you were talking about the offense and kind of getting going and a lot of that with Finn in the second game against Rutgers, but the defense really faltered. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, it did falter against Rutgers, and that was something that Chuck Martin had talked about, that they have to do a lot better job. One of the touchdowns that really changed the complexion of that game was Daquan threw one in that fourth quarter that made it 17-0. To change that one. We just couldn't move the ball. Rutgers, you know, we completed a long pass. We're going in for the tie, and we get a Big Ten call on the road that it wasn't there. It wasn't an offensive pass interference. But you got to play through that. You have to find a way to overcome what an official would interpret as pass interference. But I think we did a lot better offensively and moving the ball. We got a 3 right there before the end of the half. Rutgers comes out. They had the first possession of the third quarter. The key for us, I think, right there was to, because we were down 24-10 at that point, we stuff them on 3. We force them to punt for the first time of the night. And then we go right down and score, and suddenly it's a 24-17 game. So, you know, I think our defense did some good things again. I think it's patience with this football. There are some veterans sprinkled in on the defensive side of the ball, but there's just not enough of them when you lose 2 bookends like we had. But, you know, it's going to get better. We hope it gets better Saturday, but I know you guys are awfully, awfully good. I watched you on film last night, and I really love your quarterback. Your kid really plays hard. He's competitive as hell. And he can sling the football pretty well.
Terry Bridge, who calls the games for Miami of Ohio, is with us here. As UNLV is going to be in Ohio for a 9 o'clock local kick here, 8 o'clock with the Ted Wiens pregame show. So you said you watched film. What else did you see, and how familiar are you with the UNLV football program and Dan Mullen?
Well, Dan Mullen, we played them in the St. Petersburg Bowl. I believe that was back in 2016, I'm going to say, when he was at Mississippi State. And we should have beat him. We were kicking a field goal with 20 seconds remaining, about 35 yards, and it got blocked. And we ended up losing that game, but we certainly had a chance right there to kick it and win it and go home. But, you know, Dan Mullen has been around forever, as you guys know, and he is probably the top coach in the Mountain West. There's no doubt about it now. And you guys were 11-3 last year and played in the championship game in the Mountain West against Boise State. UNLV's got their program going in the right direction, no question about it. So, you know, from what I saw on film, Miami's defense is going to really be tested a lot, and I think more so than they have been in the first two games of the season. I mean that. Wisconsin's offense is just almost non-existent. And then Rutgers, pretty decent quarterback. Ian Strong is one of the best wide receivers I've watched in a while. He is a big dude, probably going to play on Sundays, but I think you guys offensively are better than both of them.
Terry Bridges with us. All right. So the broadcast crew and the team, we get in there on Friday afternoon. Usually we try to explore whatever town we're in on the road. What do we do in Oxford, or I guess in this case, more accurately, Hamilton? Where do we go?
I'll tell you where you go. You go to Terry B's Tavern. That's where you go.
Wait a second. Are you telling me you have a tavern in town?
I do. I do.
All right. All right. All right. So we go in. What do you recommend? What do we get?
I recommend you go to Terry B's Tavern, man. We do have karaoke on Friday nights.
Oh, no. You don't know the half of it. We're all karaoke people, too.
There you go. Karaoke starts, I think, at 9 o'clock. Now, I know it's a noon kick, so, you know, you have to be a little careful there, don't you?
We're animals. We're machines. We go on the road. We can handle it, especially if karaoke is involved. Terry, we'll close the place. Most important thing I need from you is every time, and we don't get to go to Ohio very often. We were in Dayton with the basketball team a couple of years ago. I am a massive fan, and people complain about it, of Cincinnati chili. What's your opinion on the Cincinnati chili, you know, the Skyline, the Gold Star? Because I'm really like 1 against 50 on the show. Everyone over the years is like, what are you doing? That stuff is terrible. I love it.
Well, I know some people that don't like it. I love it myself.
Of course.
And I like both of them. In a small town that I live in, there's a Skyline and a Gold Star right across the street from each other. And you're going to have an opportunity, certainly if you would like, in Hamilton to go to Gold Star or Skyline. And right up past my tavern is a Skyline. So, you know, you'll have your choice of which one you want. And I will say this, too. We have food at the tavern.
I know.
It's bar food. It's the wings and pizza and hoagies, burgers, stuff like that. And we have plenty of TVs. Yeah.
Yep.
Hey,
the
good thing is our nickname does not start with a B. You've beaten the Bengals, the Bearcats, and the Bruins.
So you feel like you're in good shape. Basically, that's a prediction. It could be a Miami-Ohio win. Thank you so much for hopping on. We will come out to your place. I don't know if you can hang out on Friday nights because, like you said, it's an early game. You know what? I'll probably get the Cincinnati chili. It's going to sound weird for breakfast or on the plane ride home. So I'm a big Tupperware guy on the road. So I'll get my fix. But we're going to your bar.
All right, man. You have to call me tomorrow night, and I'll meet you guys down there. And I'll stay for a little while. You got to remember, I'm 67 years old almost. I can't stay down there very long.
All right. You going to do a song? You need to do a karaoke song while we're there?
I'll let you guys do all that. Hey,
all right,
hey,
Terry. Hey, we appreciate it.
Listen, put me 10 on a blackjack.
There you go. All right. Building some cohesion between the announce teams. Thank you, Terry. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
There he is. I was doing research, and I'm like, okay. Because I looked up restaurants first before I looked up anyone who could talk Miami Ohio football, because that's the most important thing is the food on the road. And I'm like, Terry B's, and I see this Terry Bridge, and I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. And I was texting with him yesterday, and he's like, oh, you're looking for a place to go? My place. I'm like, no way! That's your place!
It's perfect.
It looked good. And as we've already discussed, I'll have to get into this more on the other side. Caleb Herring is a very finicky eater, so if I take him to one of these Cincinnati chili places, I think he's going to rip my head off.